Unpack your knives and stay. Yes, stay. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Top Chef Wrap Up. I'm Haley Strong. I'm here, as always, because you cannot get rid of me. Sorry to those haters, but they stopped listening 3 years ago. Kurt Clark, you're here. What's up?
Yeah, not much. Just enjoying life and trying to get through the rain that's been hitting the Midwest for the past week or so.
You still like me, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, oh,
yeah.
My God. That was not committed.
Yeah. Let me think. Yeah.
I'll get your answer by the end of the episode.
Okay.
Well, Tanya.
Hi.
What's up?
You know, just like chilling, hanging out.
How's gymnastics been?
Oh, my gosh. Such a roller coaster that like Kurt's already face palming.
Well, yeah, because we've been talking about it in our group chat.
He hasn't been talking about it. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, by the time you will have listened, the women's team will have been chosen. That happens tonight. And I am like beyond excited. I can't wait for some gymnastics. So, yeah.
And I'm gonna watch it tonight. So
you should.
No spoilers. Or you can spoil me. I really don't mind.
Yeah, I can't spoil you. It hasn't happened.
But we're not here alone. No, my friends. We have a special guest, very special, best friend of the podcast, star of Top Chef. Star of not Guy's Grocery Games, but I love the show and I can't quite Tournament of Champions, Barbecue Brawl, and had a featurette in one of my Food Network magazines where I got to look at her kitchen. Brooke Williamson.
Hey.
How are you doing?
That was quite the intro. Thank you.
Well, you deserve it. You do a lot, so.
And best friend of the podcast? That's amazing. That was maybe the best part.
So you come at least once a season, so I would say that catapults you to best friend status.
I love it here. This is a great place to be.
Somewhere Jim is typing an angry tweet.
I think I call Jim the best friend of the podcast too. Everyone who shows up every season, best friend of the podcast.
You can have multiple best friends. Yeah. I firmly believe that.
That's true.
It's not a person, it's a tier.
I've said that since seventh grade.
You've had like multiple of those best friend necklaces that like put together.
Yeah, I wear them all at the same time.
I'll be in my top nine on MySpace.
Oh my god. All right, what was your background song? I need to know what your background song was.
Oh god, I don't even remember anymore. I actually don't. A couple, like a year and a half ago, I downloaded the MySpace app because I was just amazed that was a thing. And then I immediately deleted it because it just made me feel sad.
You were embarrassed.
I was embarrassed. That was.
I think mine was Behind Hazel Eyes by Kelly Clarkson.
Oh, that's so much cooler than Sexy Back.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I didn't have MySpace.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know. You're better than us.
No, I think that's just a thing I missed. I was like, oh, okay.
It burned hot in the pan, to use a cooking term. Hot flash in the pan, hot pan flash. Hot flash pan? Pan.
Flash in the pan.
Flash in the pan. Well, Brooke, welcome to the chaotic the Top Chef podcast. Since Josh, Mike, and Emily have abandoned us. Lovingly abandoned us.
You know, they had to like level up at some point.
They put me in charge and that was a huge mistake.
Or the best decision ever.
Wherever I land, chaos reigns.
Where did they go? Did they have a place to be?
They're busy with their real lives.
They had real life things.
Yeah, they have like, you know, like kids and kittens to take care of. And
kids and kittens.
They were like, I can't spend an hour with you guys once a week. That's way too much work.
Yeah, basically.
I hear that all the time, so. Like, probably.
Yeah, once the world started sort of returning to normal, they were like, oh, we actually have to get back to our jobs now. Like, love you. And we love them greatly still. Don't worry, we love them. We love them dearly. They keep us updated. So, Brooke, what have you been up to this year?
Oh, nothing.
Just hanging out. Just like a very cash time for everyone.
You guys, this has been like the busiest year of my whole life. It's very strange. You know, during that time when everybody was like, God, I'm so bored. I'm making bread every day and using up all my bananas for banana bread and then making sourdough and then making pancakes and then making lunch and then making dinner. And I was like, oh my God, I've never worked so hard in my whole life. I'm so jealous of all of your, I mean, I speak to that lightly, but, sorry, my AirPod fell out. No, it's been quite a year. And I will say there were months where I was in town, which was great. And it was, you know, just focusing on keeping my one restaurant that I have left open and alive and some employees employed. And it was nice not to have to leave my city for a while. And then when production went back, I think Top Chef was the first production I did during the pandemic. It was like full speed ahead, you know, because everybody was watching TV and then all the content was used up.
Yeah.
And, and people were like, there's nothing left to watch. And
that's still mostly true.
I mean, yes, but we're working real hard to get you guys new content.
We're excited.
We're hard at work.
I think I speak for all of us when we were thrilled and also like not expectant that we were going to get a season of Top Chef this year. And I think it's been just a really brilliant season. I've cried many times. That's normal, but I have cried so many times. And it felt like home. To watch this season, it was really, really nice. The cast was absolutely phenomenal, and I'm so excited to kind of get your on the ground takes of what's been happening at least the last three episodes that you've been there, and maybe even before that you heard rumors about from the other people there.
Yeah, tell us all about the trauma bonding, which is essentially what this season was for the chefs. Like they did this in the middle of a global freaking pandemic, and that's why they're so close.
And it surround it like everyone's from an industry that guy hit the hardest.
Yes.
I will say they also just, you know, as a little bonus, they all got their own hotel rooms, so there was that.
Yeah,
you know, like they didn't have to live with anybody.
Yeah,
no more beds this season.
They didn't have to share a bathroom. I mean, I will say that is definitely a bonus. That if you are going to shoot a show during a global pandemic, that is the one bonus that I feel like they got. But yeah, no, I think the chefs bond every season. But I think that they're the obvious circumstances made for a really sort of close, tight group. And I think that there are certain seasons that have had that regardless. I still talk to almost everybody that was on season 14. And it's, you know, been what, 6 years since we shot that show. But they were a great group of people. I was actually involved. Oh, I just remembered the thing that I wanted to talk about. Nobody's gonna have any idea what I'm talking about right now.
They don't ever. It's fine.
You guys were two of these podcasts ago, you guys were talking about casting. And how you felt like the casting was great. And whoever did the casting this season was, you know, I got to say, you know, I was involved in casting.
Wonderful.
That's so great.
And, you know, I video chatted with every single one of the chefs and you know, an additional 30 who made the final sort of top cut of this season. And it was really lovely to see all these people who I was slightly invested in, you know, before the show even started shooting, and to sort of see how far they made it and where they came in at the end. Cause I was only there for the last four episodes. So, but I wasn't walking in blindly to who these people were. I kind of already knew their backgrounds and who they were because I was part of the final casting.
That's really cool.
Since you had that kind of that preview of like at least who was going to be there at the starting line, you know, was there anybody that you were a little bit surprised had not gone further than they did? You know, just based on who, not knowing the story necessarily of how they got there, but just seeing who the final, was it the final five were? Well, technically, because you were there for also the last chance kitchen episode as well.
Yeah.
So I guess not even that, but more broadly, what were some of the surprises that you kind of walked into in terms of just what that current state was?
Let's see here. I mean, I don't know. I kind of never have any expectations. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that surprises me anymore.
Who did you know was going to be an absolute star in casting?
I felt like Shota had a lot of potential. I also really thought, and I still think she is, and I don't think that anybody is not an absolute star because they didn't make it to the final five. But Sarah was someone who I really had big dreams of making it to the finale.
Yeah.
Just because of partially because of like her, where she lived and her experience and how she spoke about food in her interview. She seemed very sort of food nerdy in a great way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We had big dreams of shipping those two contestants as well, Shota and Sarah.
We're very into the Shota and Sarah fanfic.
Yeah, they're great together.
Oh, they're great together.
No, not in like.
We know.
Confirmed. Confirmed.
But Sasha, I thought that Sasha was gonna go really far. I knew Sasha. She was actually, I think, maybe the only chef that I personally knew. She was Bruce Kallman's chef.
I was like, oh, unlike Bruce, who knew everyone.
No, she worked for Bruce.
That's so funny.
And so I've known her for years, and I really thought she'd make it to the finale too. And I think that, you know, they both, like all of them, had the potential to get there. I loved, oh God, I'm blanking on his name. Who was the first guy that got eliminated?
Oh, the barbecue.
Yeah. Right. Who also worked like at Chez Panisse.
Oh, yeah.
It's in the spreadsheet.
Roscoe.
Yeah. I mean, he worked for Rodney Scott and Alice Waters. How like weird and wonderful is that?
Impressive.
Yeah. It was like, it seemed like just the most genuinely nice person ever as well.
Yeah.
Tell us like what it was like participating in that black box challenge with Dawn. like the very first time that you came back. The first episode, they were like, all right, get to work.
Again. They literally threw me into the fire.
Was that because nobody came back from Last Chance Kitchen?
Yeah. So that was not a planned situation.
Yeah. Last Chance didn't end up mattering so much this year, Kitchen.
Yeah, I definitely had some regrets about not bringing somebody back from Last Chance Kitchen for a moment. And they told us all to bring our knives, you know, in the event that we potentially may cook. So we all had our knives, you know, every chef there, like, and most of the chefs actually ended up cooking at some point, whether it be for like, whatever, you've seen the show.
Would you have rather done the black box challenge or cook somebody's recipe?
As terrifying and difficult and crazy as that black box challenge was, it was a lot of fun. And I will say I might have felt differently had I not done well.
Yeah. Your palate is just like 10 for 10. Like, you knew what everything in there was. I think with the exception of the pistachios, which Dawn got immediately.
And the pumpernickel breadcrumbs. There were so many ingredients in that dish that, like, it blew my mind. I looked at Padma and she was like, this is the hardest quick fire ever. And I was like, you're telling me.
Yeah, thanks,
do you know Padma. How many ingredients were on that plate? Like, and I had to, I had like a minute to taste it basically.
Right. And fix it, quote unquote. You had like what, 3 minutes, 5 minutes?
Five.
Yeah.
But it's, they said like you have 5 minutes to taste and fix, but like at that point you have to be plating. There's no time to fix anything. Yeah. There's only time to like look at it and say, okay, visually this should resemble this. Mm-hmm. And honestly, we needed all that time to cook too. So it was really, 15 minutes is nothing. And it was really, really hard. It would have been really nice to sort of waltz in and have a quick fire where I, you know, didn't have to be in a dark black room. And it was just, there were other scenarios that might have been more comfortable, but I suppose that I don't live in the world of comfortable. So it was fine.
I'm surprised that they chose to follow up the last Chance Kitchen with a paired quick fire, which as opposed to envisioning that as a possible scenario of somebody not coming back. I think it spoke to us is that they did intend for somebody to come back. And so it was kind of they had to do some last minute planning that ended up kind of rolling and probably having impact on the rest of the season as well in small little ways that we didn't.
Well, I felt very much that this episode was directly impacted with nobody coming back from Last Chance Kitchen. Because I kept telling Ethan, I'm like, there's no way anybody goes home this episode. And he's like, what are you talking about? Like, they're going to have a final two. I'm like, no, because they meant to have a final four and they don't.
Right.
And so I
wasn't. I thought they meant to have a final three, but then I thought back to last season. Didn't they take four to Italy? And then it was just that Gregory threw out his back and he couldn't participate.
I feel like he went out at five, maybe.
Oh, okay.
But I can't. I'm sorry. I can't remember who's
went out at four.
But then they had three people in the final cook.
Yeah.
And then, like, I wasn't sure if they were going to do a situation in, because I in Top Chef Canada this season they had a final four. And everyone cooks the meal for their lives, but two people get cut off after the appetizer, and then they join as sous chefs for the other two, and they complete their meal. So I didn't know if it was going to be something like that, or kind of what happened in Top Chef Kentucky, where Eric got cut after the first dish or whatever. I didn't know if that was going to do something like that in the finale. I'm glad to see that all three of them get to cook their whole meal, which really
do you want to continue to speculate, or do you want me to jump in here?
I would love for you to give us the concrete answer. That's why we invited you on this late.
I'd like to keep speculating.
Okay, I'm just gonna drink my coffee.
No, I'm kidding.
I will say that there was always the possibility of somebody going home. It's not like they said to us, everyone can stay. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. There was in the back of everybody's heads, like, potentially everyone could stay. So I will say that it was sort of a fortunate scenario for them. But it definitely was not a concrete decision that, and had there been someone who genuinely messed up and deserved to go home, they would have gone home.
It sounded like, for instance, like Dawn's second dish, crab dish, in the elimination challenge, like she forgot the potatoes as part of that boil, but it didn't really harm the dish. If it had been more of a actually like key component that had been,
if she had forgotten the crab, sure.
If there had been something, yes. If there was an egregious error, it would have been addressed.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yes.
Brooke, what time was your call time the day you had to go clamming?
Oh, God, it was like 4 a.m.
My second question. Padma didn't go to sleep in between the night before and her call time, right?
Like, I'm sure she did. I'm sure
she did. Because I would have just tried to pull an all-nighter and gone to bed as soon as I was done judging the quick fire. That's just me.
She also probably went straight back to sleep after she did that little bit.
How long were you guys clamming?
Couple hours, well, some maybe 2 hours, but then the chefs left, and I stayed with production to get more clams. And I could have left. I mean, I was enjoying where I was. They were like, we need to collect if more clams, or needs to be like backup clams for the quick fire. So I was like, I'll stay and find more. And we tried for another hour, and then the tide came in, and then it got to the point where we were a little concerned that we might not make it back to shore. Because the tide came in really fast.
Very flat. That tide's going to, like, suddenly there's just water.
Yeah. Suddenly. And then the area where you kind of had to get across to get back to the cars, just vanished. And we were like up to our chests in water walking back. There was a moment where I was like holding my phone over my head.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes.
What even is nature? I don't know. It's just, I have a question about, because I am terrible at doing the show apparently. And so I ended up binging the last three episodes. And so I got like a lot of back to back to back emotion, including like your return. So it was just like a glorious, you know, like feast for the eyes, literally. how was your first time back this season as a guest judge amongst all of those, like, you know, All-Stars, you know, and you being a part of that group, rightfully so. Given that that episode that you were first back for, the main challenge, the elimination challenge, was just so emotional at judges' table, the one where Maria ended up going home. Like, I, you know, we all saw that you were getting emotional at judges' table. And, like, it was just one of those poignant moments that you don't often see in any competition show. What was that meal and that experience like?
So many questions in one.
You can pick one.
You know, I think just everything felt very intense from the moment we all got to Portland. You know, I mean, I got there right after the fires. There had been a lot of shifting of things. There were protests right outside the, you know, we're staying downtown. It just, everything seemed very amplified. And I had a week of quarantine where I couldn't leave my hotel room, literally for an entire week. I don't know if you guys caught my TikTok dance on Instagram. that was 4 days of practice for one 10-second video. But basically, you know, by the time I got out of that quarantine, I was excited to be out and be a part of what was going on. And then straight into, you know, judging Last Chance Kitchen, where nobody came back. It was a lot all at once. Mm-hmm. And then into the Black Box Challenge, where I was like, it was a very intense way to sort of enter the judges panel. In previous seasons where I've come in and judged, it's like I fly in or I'm driven somewhere and I spend maybe the night somewhere. And then the next day I go in and I do my thing and then I leave.
The mom summer camp infamously.
Oh my God.
What a challenge.
Ugh. So that was fun, but it was like, you know, 12 hours of my life. Okay. And this was 3 weeks of my life, 1 week of which I was trapped in a hotel room. And then I get out and it's like, I knew everyone around me and everybody was in the same position of, this was their first time sort of doing something big after and traveling during the pandemic. And, yeah, it was just everything seemed very intense. And then that elimination challenge where Maria went home, Jamie, I could feel Jamie's pain and guilt, honestly, of being left in the competition where she felt like, you know, one of her friends was being torn away from her. You know, there wasn't a lot to like, not that there ever is when you're in this competition, really the people around you are the people around you. So I don't know that bonds were so strong because of the pandemic situation. But I do feel like emotions were maybe heightened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were all of us in the industry were going through the hardest time of our careers. And I think that that definitely lent to intensified emotion. Mm-hmm. And just watching what was going on at judges' table, like, you know, I knew that Jamie wasn't giving up. She wasn't saying, I want to go home. But she just wanted everyone to stay. And I understand that feeling. I mean, when Sheldon was eliminated, when we were in Mexico, it was me or Sheldon. And it was almost harder to watch him go than to be told you're done. Mm-hmm. Because you feel their pain, you know what that feels like. And you don't want anybody to feel that way, especially in a time where you've been feeling that way for months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing that struck me about this season, I think we maybe talked a little bit about it last week, Haley, is it's a really,
I have no idea what we talked about last week. As soon as I hit the end broadcast button, I don't know what happened.
I wasn't here, so this is new to all of us.
Okay, so this is for everybody. But no, it's like on this network, like most of the podcasts are about, even like Top Chef, it's typically a show where whether it's Top Chef or Survivor or Amazing Race, you have a pool of contestants that gets narrowed down week by week by week. But I really loved watching the judging panel kind of be the opposite situation. It's like once you're in, once you've gone through quarantine, you're kind of stuck there in the best possible way. Because it seemed like there was like a small pool of judges at the beginning, like, you know, four or five people. And then they keep adding people and adding people and adding people. Like once like Kristen Kiss showed up, like you knew that she was going to be there from that point on, most likely. Like Melissa shows up, she's going to be there from that point on.
Not true. You lost people throughout.
We did.
We lost Carrie.
You lost Kristen Kish. You've lost Amar.
Oh, yeah.
Never mind.
We've lost a lot,
but you know, it's never really been one and done. At the very least, it seems like there's been at least like a 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, because you're not going to quarantine for a full week and then do one episode.
And that to me has been, I guess what I'm trying to say, Brooke, is I have very much enjoyed the robust panel of alumni that have come through at Judges Table and even if we're not seeing you competing alongside Kristen or you know, Richard Blaze, it's great to see you talk.
Richard Blaze is gone. Is he?
No, he wasn't.
He's not gone.
I just forgot about him. Poor Richard. He's so often forgotten about.
I was going to ask Brooke.
I'm just kidding. That was sarcasm. He's never forgotten about. He's everywhere.
He's unforgettable.
Yeah. You were always on my mind was written about Richard, actually.
Because one
like odd fact that no one knows.
Kurt, what are you trying to say?
What I'm trying to say is I have loved
the sentence and go with it, Kurt.
I love the panel of judges. I've loved being able to see you guys interact because I think that's one of this from in terms of we've covered all many of the seasons that these people have all been on.
Well, Amar and I were on the same season of Top Chefs.
So. Yeah, that's true. You were at the pop up.
I wasn't at Amar's pop up.
But you weren't at Amar's pop up. But I did. I know Richard was there because I was going to ask Brooke, like, of all of the people that she could sit at a mass judging dinner with, who would she want to sit next to, most likely? And I saw because at the most recent one, you were sitting next to Richard, which is why I know he's still there. If you had your choice of seating plans, which of your fellow alumni would be like your dining mates? Who would you want to sit next to on either side, or it could even be like some of like the normal judges, like Tom or Gail? But if you could pick your dining partners.
Oh God. I love Tom at a judge's table or like at a dining table. I actually feel like
in
Tom
a car or
wherever,
you know,
playing guitar around a fire pit.
Play guitar?
Oh my God. That was every night on the coast. We sat around a bonfire and he'd play guitar and he'd be like, any requests? And I'd request something. And then he'd be like, you know, you have to sing now. And I'd be like, well, I don't know the words. And then he'd pull up the words and it was a whole thing. Anyway,
Brooke, we are an ultimate Tom Colicchio is hot podcast.
Yeah.
Like, sorry to interrupt.
It's not exclusive to Tom. Mm-hmm. Like, we're very equal opportunity in terms of the people that are hot. We'll get to that's my next question, basically. But like, Tom plays guitar.
Yeah, he plays a lot of guitar. Actually, look at his Instagram. I think his guitar just broke. It was a sad post. He and I feel like share a lot of the same food opinions. And I feel like if no one else is on my page at a table, Tom is probably on my page. Dale Talde is a lot of fun to sit next to as well.
He's been a lot more of, at least what we've seen in the edit, we've been hearing a lot more of Dale, I think, the past couple of episodes.
Yeah. Like,
he nearly blew a gasket when you did not get the full plate of the cheese factory. He was like, that's just fucking unbelievable at this stage of the competition.
He was real pissed.
He was pissed on your behalf, which is also like, well, right. Not just your behalf, but like, he's like, this is, you know, at this stage of the competition, yada, yada, yada. But
it's like a reoccurring issue. And like, I feel like we all spent so much time saying like time management is so important and it's, you know, half the battle is working against the clock and please pay attention to, you know, what you can get done in this amount of time. And it's like, many times can you?
I have a whole rant about it. Like, I want you to answer the question, but I have a whole rant about it.
It was just frustrating because of how much we loved Dawn, you know, like, it was just such a frustrating position to be in where we like had to say something negative because it was
so good. I loved it.
You know, and her food is so good. And she knows how to nail flavor so beautifully and balance. And it was just like, to leave components off a dish multiple times is just so frustrating.
I liked how Gregory kind of framed it up this episode in terms of, I think he seemed like he was shifting it a little bit away from a time management issue to like, maybe it's just too many things you're trying to do, which is related to time management. It's like more about maybe don't look at how can you manage time to get everything in that you're trying to get in, but like, how can you maybe simplify a little bit? And then I was like, okay, so just, and then there was the potatoes, but luckily
the way that my brain always worked was like, get the things that need to be on the plate done first. And then if you have extra time, then maybe fluff it up.
What's
your rant?
This drove me insane watching it back to back. I think like,
amplified.
It definitely amplified. It took me to like all work no play makes Jack a dull boy level. Like I was full on shining by the episode 13. So like So the thing is that drives me absolutely bat crap crazy about this, right? Is that at this point in the competition, like you all like just discussed, like the judges keep saying, you know that a big part of this process is going to be plating and making everything look like it's supposed to, like you want it to look. And then if you think that you need 15 minutes to plate and you are terrible at time management, then add a buffer of like another 5 minutes or so to do so. If you have an issue for whatever reason with knowing how many people you have to serve, then the first thing that you should do is like, you know, count out the plates and put them aside so that you already know that you have the plate. One of my jobs is logistics. So I'm like big on organization and like efficiency and, you know, all of that stuff. But like, give yourself a buffer, come up with little like tricks that are going to help you in the kitchen. Because for me, never being in any competition show, especially like never, like I would never be on Top Chef or like Top Chef amateur or like Top Chef baby, but like
I cannot wait for that release.
Yeah, but like it's the fact that like Dawn's dishes are just so well received. It's always about how like flavorful her food is, and I understand that it takes a while to develop that flavor, but this last episode, it wasn't just Dawn, it was like it spread to everyone.
Well, this last episode they also had to clean Dungeness Crab, which is a lot of work.
Yeah. Should they have gotten more time then, do you think? Like, do you think they were cut too short?
For two dishes, it was a time crunch. And I think it's about like planning your dish properly. I also think that the fact that Dawn served her crab like as a crab boil style, and she basically cut the crab in half and didn't clean it, should have given her that buffer.
I was concerned that you all would not be as into that because of how messy. My sister, who has seen a total of 3 episodes of Top Chef, but she and my nephew are staying with me right now, decided she hated the show until I turned it on and she was like crying. But she was saying, oh, is she going to go home because it's too hard for the judges to eat? I was so happy when you all just dug in and were
none of us are prima donnas. Like, you know, yes, we were maybe dressed inappropriately for the dish.
That's
amazing. But I mean, if food is good, food is good, you know, like regardless of how hard you have to work for it. Sometimes it's more rewarding when you have to work for it.
I love crab done like this personally. Like I'm a huge crab fan. Good. I love when it's just like on the plate, like full of spices, and you need a whole roll of like.
Tom was sitting across the table from me, and that I'm so glad they included that shot of him biting into the crab body, because I was sitting there looking at the plate, like I don't know what to do right now. And he picked up the whole crab and bit into it. And I looked at him like, really? And he's like, just do it. Just go for it. And I was like, how far away is my lipstick?
I also love the argument at the table of whether the plating was intentional or not.
Yeah, Dawn needs to learn how to lie strategically because that should have been of course.
Like, yes, there was not supposed to be any potatoes on this dish.
No one would have known about the potatoes unless she mentioned the potatoes. Congratulations to people who have integrity. I like winning.
Same. I looked at that bowl and I was like, this either was intentional or she literally threw the crab in the bowl from across the room.
And it was artsy enough. The sauce is a beautiful color. So you could have just been like, it's meant to be a mess.
Visions. When she said it was not intentional, I literally had visions of her standing like 100 feet away from the bowl, throwing the crab into the bowl.
Just like a discus toss.
Yeah.
Like I knew Dawn was an athlete. Was she better or was it discus?
Shot.
Yeah, yeah, seriously. Just like, you know, like Kobe.
Or is it like javelin because of like the little like pincers?
Yeah. I think she was a jumper too.
She was a high jumper, yeah. Okay, so this question kind of relates to what we were talking about with the messiness and how you were dressed. And every week we always talk about just like the phenomenality is the word I've made up of everyone's, thank you, of everyone's wardrobe. So do you all get racks of, are those your clothes?
Those are,
I mean, I know like Padma and Tom probably get like, you know.
I mean, they have stylists on, well, there is a stylist on set who like picks out what you're going to wear, but it's all out of stuff that you've brought. So like your wardrobe needs to be approved because they don't want people clashing or matching. Mm. And often it starts with like, what is Padma wearing and how can we fill in the blanks? But
sounds right.
Rightfully so. But it's not like they provide clothes for us. Those were, I mean, are you specifically referring to Kwame?
Kwame is like the best dressed individual I've ever seen. Gregory has had some amazing outfits. Ed, like, the one episode he came in with like this beautiful brown jacket and a matching, like I was like done.
Dale's,
I was, like,
you are shirt, so even beautiful. This episode had like gold embroidery.
Yeah,
well, that was happening.
Gail also does have maybe stuff supplied for her, but
yeah.
I would say you know us minions, we bring our own wardrobe. Like literally, I've never had anyone style me for anything. So I mean. I was actually just having a conversation this morning with my husband about the fact that I need a larger closet. And it's because of these shows that I do where like I just shot 18 episodes of Barbecue Brawl in Texas. And it was kind of a specific scenario where like it had to be sort of West barbecue appropriate clothing, but
a lot of great overalls. Like exactly. Stunning. I love the space bun
jumpsuits.
Every day you posted a new story on Instagram of like your hairdo and your outfit for that day. And I was like, yes, like,
but I have a lot of fun with it. Like that is something that I really enjoy doing. If I hated getting myself dressed or, you know, buying clothes or styling myself, I would be in trouble.
And you did your own hair?
No.
Okay.
No. They supply hair and makeup.
Okay. Because my sister was like, who's the pretty one? And I was like, well, you know, which one? Because she doesn't know anything about the show. And
they're all beautiful. They're like, we've been all beautiful. In, like, Melissa Stan.
Melissa.
The season two.
Yeah. My sister wants Melissa's hair. She's just like, I just want my hair to do that. And she was just like, Brooke is glowing.
Oh, thank you.
She's glowing.
Thank you. I'm not saying it just because you're here, but no. You have been so stunning this entire season.
Had you not been here, we would have been worse about it, frankly.
Yeah, we would have been more embarrassing. Yeah. I don't know how you get the volume in your ponytails that you do.
I just have a lot of hair. It's just a lot of hair.
It's a problem. I just have a lot of hair.
And it's so, it's like, and it was spun out of pure gold. Like, there's nothing I can do.
Yeah, it is. It was like,
I have spent a lot of time cutting my hair out of my head and like trying to make it thinner. I know the grass is always greener, but it's a lot to deal with. But it also gives me options. And I never go into a hair and makeup chair and don't appreciate it. I'm always very appreciative of someone who can put a braid in my hair or you know, do great space buns, and I take advantage of that shit.
You're hashtag blessed because most people would have to like weave it, like wear like a piece or like wear a wig and use their hairline. Like there are so many options, but you don't have to do any of that because you are special.
You're one of God's special children.
You really are. God must spend a little more time on Brooke.
I also did a lot of moisturizing masks during that week in quarantine and a lot of yoga classes. So maybe it was the week of quarantine that really did wonders for me.
Maybe I should try that.
Yeah, let's all do it.
Now? Yeah.
Yeah, let's all do it right now.
I can't do it
now that the quarantine has been the quarantine or the in Canada you had to quarantine up until like last week, right?
We just finished our third lockdown about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so now I'm thrilled to be out in the world again looking at people on the patios. It's a joy. Exactly.
Yeah.
Indoor dining coming eventually.
Congrats. Exactly.
Okay, last question. I'm sorry to just barrage you with these, but like if I didn't ask them now, then I'd never have the opportunity, I don't think, again. Okay, so this is random, but how long when someone says medic does it actually take for a medic to appear?
Is this regarding Shota's
and also like Dawn a few episodes ago?
Yeah, there's always a medic waiting in the wings. So it's not like they have to call somebody. There's a medic on site during every challenge. Like often they're kind of just sleeping in the corner because they're not needed a lot.
Sometimes I'm like, they said medic. Like get some shots of espresso and be ready. They're dealing with shellfish.
There are probably certain challenges where they're kind of ready to go, and probably more so even in the like quick fire when you're in studio shooting in the Top Chef kitchen, they're just sitting there on set, especially within the first couple of episodes. Always someone cuts themselves because they're nervous.
I was like picturing when they were doing the quick fire and those little like balconies on the first floor, like Richard Blaze like peeking through the room, like, what are you guys up to there? Like, were anybody in those rooms and they had to get like a notice on their door being like,
those were all production rooms. So like the director, it was his patio, it might have been Tom's patio. They were just sort of in these alcoves and everything was meant to happen on the beach.
That makes sense.
And then it downpoured. So they had to they couldn't cook on the beach anymore. But then we were standing, I think there was an extra, so all of those rooms were production rooms, like that someone was staying in. And then the room that the balcony that Padma and I were standing on, that where they served us, that was kind of an extra like craft services room.
And speaking like on the heels of that challenge, when we began to kick off the James Beard challenge, this episode reminded me how much I didn't know I missed Nina. I was so happy to see her back and like be a fixture of the episode, and that just made me smile. Like on the initial watch, and then on my rewatch, it was just good to see Nina once more. And so
Nina's great. Nina's amazing. She's such a sweet, incredible woman. I was excited to see her too.
Yeah. Perfect black dress, chunky necklace combination as well. So really just overall killing it.
So the dishes that were in the quick fire.
Are we going to start this podcast now?
Shota made sake yuzu butter clams with pickled onions. Dom made butter clam bisque with apple and pepper salad. And Gabe made sopa de mariscos with poached caper and butter clams in broth. I mean, sounds delicious. I have taken myself out of the world of clams after having bad reactions to mussels. So now I'm just staying away from anything that comes in a shell that's shaped like this. Crab and shrimp, I will never give up.
They're called bivalves. Those are called bivalves.
What's a univalve? What's a trivalve? Do those exist?
I don't know.
did Shota end up? I know when we saw Shota kind of leaving the clamming, he picked up some. Was it seaweed? Did he end up actually using that as part of the dish?
There was definitely seaweed in his dish, and I felt like that was a really smart move. And he kind of, he just picked it up on his way out and he was like, oh, I could use this. Dawn had a hard time digging because she, remember a couple episodes ago, she cut the tip of her finger. And she cut it really badly. She kind of cut the whole tip of her finger off. And it wasn't a situation where like within a week or two even that it was healed. And so she had gloves on while she was like digging in the sand, but the sand was really hard to dig through. And it was, I felt really bad. Like she just had a hard time digging because of her hand. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I was terrified, like digging through that wet sand, there's broken shells in there. I mean, it was a scary situation. So, I lost track. What's the question again?
I don't know. I think you asked me a question of, are we starting the podcast now?
Okay. Yeah, mm-hmm. Let's go.
Well, you even mentioned that you stuck around and helped production, like, you know, gather additional clams for the quick fire. Were those available to all of the?
Yeah. So there was no shortage of clams. Okay. They didn't have to like, you know, there were more clams there.
They weren't stuck using what they
the found. Three clams that they harvested.
Yeah, but they were all, I was actually surprised nobody steamed them open. It seemed like they were all shucking them open. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you can kind of easily steam clams open, but I guess it kind of depends on how you want to cook them. But I was very impressed by those three dishes. Dawn's soup was a little gritty, and I found it strange that she made a clam chowder and just kind of pureed the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. I never love when a contestant is asked, like, is it meant to be chunky?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it should be intentionally chunky or intentionally not chunky.
Yeah, it even looked like the picture that we saw of it looked a little frothy as well.
Yeah, well, you did hear her asking for a chinois. So, you know, I think she really did want to strain it. It was just a matter of finding a strainer and having enough time to do that, which she didn't. So, I was actually very impressed with all three dishes. Tasted really good.
Looking ahead to the elimination challenge when they had to work with the Dungeness crab, you know, two ways, Gregory went out on the boat with Gabe. If you had your choice of, you know, doing the clamming in the morning or doing the crabbing in the later in the morning, clamming or crabbing, which you get to pick one.
Well, I don't love boats. So there's that.
Okay. So that, okay.
Although those were like little dinghies and they didn't go out very far, I would have been fine. And crabbing would have been super cool, but I would have been happy to do either. You know, the fact that I was done by 9 a.m. was, mm-hmm. was kind of nice for the day. And then I got to kind of just enjoy the rest of the day.
Nice. Was it probably like 90 minutes, 2 hours outside of Portland at that point?
About an hour and a half down a really windy road. It was actually very close to Tillamook. So it's just like took the same drive 2 days in a row. And actually the clam quick fire did not happen immediately after they went clamming. It was the next day. So
TV production magic.
Yeah, seriously.
So you know, like I said to you before we started this podcast, when I got back at like 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, I went for a run on a beautiful sunny day. Which would have been maybe optimal to cook on the beach at that moment. But
okay, quick follow-up question to that. Mm-hmm. Were the chef tables done on two separate days or one day?
The chef tables.
Oh, for the restaurant wars?
Yeah. Like, did you hear any rumblings of that?
No, that was all done on the same day.
Okay. Because I was just like, there's no way they can do this on the same day. But
I mean, I'm sure it was a long day. Maybe I was there, but I wasn't physically there.
Yeah. You weren't dining yet.
I wasn't dining yet.
Why your hair is so big. It's full of secrets.
Each strand is a production secret. I really loved this this elimination challenge. I thought it was like, frankly, like the better version of last week's challenge, where I was a little disappointed that they had to use cheese, like cheddar cheese, in five different ways. It just felt a little gimmicky to me, where this one felt very much more structured, not like simpler, but just like it made more sense to me. It's like cold course and a hot course with crab. Do whatever you want.
Yeah, it was a great way to showcase some creativity and some personality for them, I think. But also a difficult challenge because of what it was and and the sort of the ingredient that had to be highlighted is something that you can screw up, you know. So you have to have the skills to be able to not only pull off two phenomenal dishes in, but also in that amount of time to be able to break down crab. And
it looked so difficult.
It was so yummy, though. Like, crab is like my favorite thing in the whole world. So I was really excited.
Yeah, it looked so good. It was also really great to get the education that we got about James Beard in the episode. Yeah. Because we hear all of the time that the name and know how prestigious the award is, but I don't think that we've ever gotten that in depth of an explanation of like who the person actually was and what he was all about.
Yeah,
and we got another and you know, Brooke last week, Kaylee and I had talked about how in the Cheddar Challenge there was a moment where Tom seemed to kind of step out and address the camera more directly about, you know, some people might think this is like, you know, too using cheddar at this stage in the competition is too simple, but you know, we have to have them like escalate. We're making this more difficult. And here, I think there's even a moment where Tom kind of steps out and gives us some of that education.
I loved it. It was like in a booth. He was like, welcome everyone to education.
Yeah.
And so like I go to your class, Tom.
It feels a little different from how they've typically, you know, used Tom. Like, oftentimes he's talking about, I think, you know, commenting directly on, I'm surprised that so-and-so is using the dish this way. But this, I think, the first time they've had him, like, kind of, it feels like new him speaking to either the complexity of a challenge or just the topic of James Beard. Is that something that you'd pick up on? Is this like a change in direction, like using just Tom in a new way? Or
I don't know that it's a thing that they've chosen to change. But I think that the need to address who James Beard was in a very specific way was there because I think unless you're really involved in the food world, you kind of don't know the importance of James Beard and, you know, why these people get these, or even that these awards exist, you know, like people introduce guest judges as like James Beard Award winner, but like, what does that even mean? And if you don't know about chefs and food, and I think a lot of people who watch Top Chef don't, it needs to be explained, and especially in a challenge, the episode before the finale, you know, why is this so important? And he's from this area, and why are we talking about him?
Yeah, I definitely hope that moving forward that we have more of these kind of like edutainment moments in terms of giving us some of the important background either on the history or some of like the technical things that people might not be considering. So I'm hoping that they continue with it because it's like all I knew about James Beard is a prestigious award. I didn't know much about the person. I didn't know he was from Portland, but like this was nice to put a person behind the acclaim.
The name, yeah. Like it's very like we know the name, but we don't.
Yeah, or that like Julia Child was involved in it.
I had no idea.
I had no idea about that. I guess we should read more.
We should think about that for sure. We'll do research for our podcast.
Yeah, we could definitely, you know, read a book or like, you know, probably not though. But like,
literally just Google.
Yeah.
that's something to consider. I'll put it on my to-do list.
Wait until you're back on and ask you questions.
Yeah.
But I mean, no, you're right. I think in the past you probably would have seen, you know, that happen in like an interview with one of the chefs. But I think that Tom had a lot to speak to it. So he did.
I love the Tom text, so like context, except Tom text.
Ooh. Tom,
does that work?
That was a great Natalie portmanteau you just did there.
Oh my God.
So the cold courses, soda made Dungeness crab nigiri with yuzu, koshu, aioli, and pickled ginger. Hear me out. And no. I get it that they have to get these menus printed beforehand.
Yeah.
I think they always do them dirty by having the menus printed.
Yeah. You know, I think that the one bite that he gave us was so good that we needed to touch on the fact that there was a negative.
And yeah, that's fair.
That was the negative. And it was also like, you know, we got two other dishes that really showed what, how much time that they had spent on them, and Shota's didn't. So it needed to be touched on, but honestly, that one bite of sushi was really beautiful. Mm-hmm. It was like, it was the one thing that I would have loved 12 of.
And, and do you think that it's better to not do the dish exactly as it's wrote on the menu rather than like put something on the plate that matches the description, but you're not proud of?
I do. I think that, I think it's better to omit, even if the descriptor doesn't match.
I lied. You and Naomi like spoke up about how frankly kind of like bold it is to do that. You know, if you mess up and make that mistake, because Kwame was not having it.
And Kwame was not having a lot of things.
Bad day for Kwame.
Well, I'm going to leave that out. Kwame has a lot of opinions. But, and he and I, we have a very like love-hate relationship. He's, we often see opposite sides of the argument, but, which was funny sitting across the table from him at the cheese challenge, because he took a bite of Jamie's cod with cheddar. Mm-hmm. Was it cod? It was like sea bass. Maybe it was Chilean sea bass. And I was like, this is awful. And he looked at me, he was like, this is delicious. Can I have yours? And I was like, who are you? I think that I'm a person who understands and appreciates Japanese food maybe more than some of the other chefs that were at the table. And he nailed the rice, and things were seasoned perfectly, and the flavors were, it was just a perfectly executed nigiri. And there were, I knew how much had gone into that. Yeah. You know, there were a lot of work went into that, regardless of whether or not there should have been more on the plate. There should have been more because it was delicious, you know? Mm.
Gabe made Dungeness crab with lobster mushroom, crab stock, and avocado yogurt. When he said he was using the lobster mushroom, I gasped. I thought that was such a cool idea. I love it. Mm-hmm. The way it tied back to kind of what they've already done in Portland.
Yeah.
And it looked like a great dish.
It was absolutely delicious. It was, you know, we had gone on a hike the day before, and seen lobster mushrooms growing. It was like all the things that were growing outside, very local, but also very much in the flavor profile that you would expect from Gabe. So I thought it was a beautiful dish. My only comment was something that was absolutely touched on, was that it was not a cold dish.
Yeah.
And it also didn't seem like something that was done because he didn't have enough time to chill that crab broth. That crab broth was delicious hot, and I don't think it would have been better cold.
Right.
So to me, it felt like a hot dish.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Don made Dungeness crab salad with cashew soup and pickled oyster mushroom. I thought this was a really striking dish.
Yeah.
Like any of these ones I would have picked up and shoved into my dumb little mouth immediately.
Yeah, it was a smart dish. It was delicious. The cashew cream was absolutely delicious. Presentation wise, it felt like she plated it rushed, which was very on par with sort of who Don has been.
Mm-hmm.
In the hot courses, Gabe made mole coloradito crab in a seafood stock with sunchokes and crab fat tortilla. He left the tortilla off. He burned one into a napkin.
Yeah, the tortillas were also a little undercooked, which they didn't mention. But really yummy. I actually don't mind a slightly undercooked tortilla. They were grilled, which I thought added some dimension to them, mm-hmm. Which is partially why it was a little bit undercooked, because he like didn't do them on a plancha. There was a lot of disagreement in that sunchoke being in there. It was a very prominent flavor. But I felt like it made sense. I didn't feel like it took away from the flavors of the crab. I actually felt like it complemented the flavor a lot.
I think and his omission of the, I mean, you kind of touched on it, Haley, like his omission of the tortilla wasn't the same as like he forgot. It was where there was like a issue. Just was it the towel?
So sorry, I would have melted.
Yeah, I would have torn one of them in half just so that every plate had one. Like I know that's probably not the best move, but
that's smart.
I would have done. I would have made sure every plate at least had a piece. Like even if it's not as consistent as the rest of them, at least it feels more intentional.
Yeah.
Than seeing one plate without it.
I would have maybe made an extra tortilla.
That's what my husband said, who like doesn't cook professionally. He was like, like everything on Top Chef, you should just be making one extra just in case.
Or four extra.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
But no, he couldn't have served that tortilla. But you're right, Haley, he should have torn one in half so that it wasn't like a glaring omission.
I think he should have just served the napkin tortilla.
Cut the napkin part out.
Yeah, like make sure someone with a really great sense of humor got it and just was like,
ha-ha. Or served it in the napkin so that it like would have seemed intentional that he did, or like he didn't know.
Right. Gotta teach these people to be better liars. Yeah. Like this is the debate coach in me where it's just like, just make something up. The judges will never know. Like,
I know, like they were way too honest. Like, you know, like it showed a kind of. I feel like maybe he would have lied around it if it wasn't so blatantly on the menu that he had to. Like, I think he would have been like, "Yeah, I meant to have this one." Because I feel like he did that in another challenge where they're like, "Was your broth meant to be this loose?" And he's like, "Yeah, totally. That's exactly what I meant for it to do." Speaking of Shota, he made braised purple daikon with Dungeness crab salad, soy, and cherry vinaigrette with persimmon. God, he makes just beautiful plates. Like, it's really cool to see what he does.
That was a really delicious, absolutely stunning dish.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Everything looked great.
And was Shota the obvious winner of this challenge for you?
For me, yeah.
Cool. Okay.
that's what I figured.
That's right.
Don made Pacific crab boil, Dungeness crab and beer base broth. Frankly, this is the dish I was most excited about. It's closest to what I would probably eat. Not that like I wouldn't enjoy what Gabe and Shota made, but I'm just basic. Not that like I wouldn't enjoy it and wouldn't try it. It's just this is more the stuff I would have accessible to me.
Yeah, this dish, there was a lot of disagreement at the table. And it was because Don's sauce was so absolutely delicious. Like it tasted like it hit you in the face with flavor. But it felt like, I don't know if this makes sense. It felt like obvious delicious versus like refined delicious. So to me, Shota's dish took more refinement and nuanced skill. Whereas Don like, very obviously understands big, bold, delicious flavor. They were just two very opposite approaches to an ingredient.
What else was in that broth? It says beer. It was beer-based broth, but what else was in there?
It felt like a hot chicken sauce, like a Nashville hot chicken sauce with it like almost felt like there was like citric acid and MSG in it, you know, like, and there wasn't
like a tomato base. Maybe
it was a dried, like almost like a paprika base. It was like a dried spice base. To me, it felt a little bit like dried spices. But it was super tasty. The issue that I had, which they didn't mention, was that like some of the dishes had fennel on top of them. Some of them had a carrot. There were vegetables in that dish.
Yeah.
But everybody got a different vegetable. Like it wasn't like purposefully plated.
Clearly. Do you think she just like hucked the carrots too?
and we all wanted something to like sop up that sauce because the sauce was the best part. And like those potatoes, we didn't know about the potatoes until she came out. And I was like, I just want like rice or a potato or some kind of starch to eat this sauce. And all we had was the crab that you kind of had to work for. But it felt like it needed more refinement in the plating department.
A time thing. I just want the Olympian in her.
I know.
To fully emerge. The other thing I've noticed in Don's cooking is that it is so intentional. It seems like her process, like you can go all the way back to Restaurant Wars when she couldn't really say what her dish was until it was done. Like her process for coming up with dishes seems completely different and more cerebral than most people. And it's not until it's nearly done that she can fully articulate what it is that she's doing. And then by that point, she's been thinking so long that she's like run out of time for the doing, which is the plating.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of the same way, I think, as I develop a dish as I go. And it's really hard to know how it, especially with a dish that you've never made before. And I'm the kind of person who never makes the same dish. Like I didn't go on Top Chef with like a library of dishes in my head. That's not how I compete. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I'm good at quick fires. Cause it doesn't, you can't like fall back on stuff. You have to kind of create in the moment. And to me, that's what's hard about those elimination challenges is sometimes, you know, you have this time and you feel like you need to use your time in the best way possible. And in order to do that, you really kind of have to know what you're making from the get-go. And how do you do that when it's a dish you've never made before and you don't know if something's going to taste good or work, or you might have to omit? Like, it's not something that's easy to do.
What was your favorite dish you ate on the season?
Well, that's hard.
Leaving out the finale.
Yeah, it hasn't. Maybe it hasn't happened yet.
Well, next week.
For us.
I mean, honestly, it might have been. It might have been this crab challenge. I think all three of those all of the crab dishes were delicious. But I have very specific memories of that braised icon dish, and the sauce that Gabe's crab, you know, he presented his crab in the shell, and that sauce, I don't think that sauce got enough verbiage. I don't think it got enough airtime. Gabe's sauce in that shell with his crab was really unbelievably delicious.
Yeah. All season, he seems to have just been like killing the sauce game.
Yeah, he's definitely a sauce technician, and that takes you a long way.
An engineering degree gives him in terms of applying it to food.
So smart.
Yeah.
Like, so what do you think are the strengths and weaknesses of the competitors going into the finale, and who is the winner?
When is this airing? I mean, I think the strengths and weaknesses are all very glaringly apparent, right? I think all the things that we just talked about in this episode are things that you're watching out for in the finale, except for maybe the fact that there are not quite as many restrictions in the finale meals, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're kind of able to showcase who they are without having the confinements of a specific challenge.
And I think I'm trying to remember from the previews that they have to make four courses.
I believe it's four courses. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about this finale in a way that I think maybe I haven't been in a while, just because I feel like Gabe, Shota, and Don are bringing such different things to the table, and their meals are going to be so unique to them. These three have really been great at cooking this season, true to themselves, and we don't. And any time they're kind of faltering, it's when they're not really staying true to themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think it might be like a really hard, like, final meal to judge because they're so different. It's kind of like hard to compare them.
I'm going to say amen to that. Yeah. Yeah. All I'm going to say is that the number of hours that we sat and waited for judges' table to be done in the finale. Do you remember, I know you follow me on Instagram, do you remember me posting like videos of us dancing at a winery, like late night, like 2 a.m.?
Yeah.
Like, like Kwame put on a bunch of hip hop and we were like dancing for hours.
Sounds amazing.
That was waiting for judges table to be done.
Oh, yeah, it reminds me, I feel I can't remember if it was Gail or Padma posted a picture of when they were in the Bahamas for like a finale and like Gail's sleeping on the desk because it took so long to go through it.
So long.
Yeah.
This is no exception. This was the longest I think I've ever seen judges table deliberate.
Mm. Yeah. You reminded me that I was really hoping at some point we were going to touch on Oregon's wine country. I think that California's wine country is so highlighted that it's often forgotten, you know, Washington and Oregon also just like do amazing wine. And I'm from a wine country. So I love seeing other places do it. So I'm glad that that is going to be highlighted, at least in the next episode. I'd love to see maybe like them talk to a sommelier about pairing wines with the dishes they're planning on making. I think that, no, darn. All right. Well, dreams
it's about
are crushed.
The food, Haley. It's about the food.
I guess so. But I loved at one point Gail was like leaning back this episode with her glass of wine. Was like, that was great. I was like, yes, Gail, I love you. And you know, I love a champagne Padma.
Padma is so much fun.
I was wondering if like Padma at the Quickfire was like a champagne Padma, but no.
No. I would like to see champagne Padma and Tequila Brook hang out. That would be fun.
Yeah, okay, that sounds like it'd be great.
My new dream is that.
Tequila Padma was pretty hilarious too during Restaurant Wars. When she just straight up said that, like, you're killing it.
Do you remember the episode at the Patron distillery in Guadalajara where we were, part of the challenge was to make a margarita and all of the judges were like we had to wait like 3 hours before doing judges table. Everyone was drunk.
I mean, that's amazing. I love that so much for them.
Fantastic.
Brooke, what other hot goss do you have to tell us?
I don't know. Ask me questions. I got answers.
I'm trying to think. Like, what's one challenge you... Like, have you been watching the season along, or are you just kind of like living? I know you're not like the biggest reality TV. You are watching it. What's one challenge you missed, you wish you were at the dinner for?
The tofu challenge. Actually, that's where Dawn cut herself. I would have loved to eat that food, but
are you squeamish? Like,
I'm a little squeamish, especially with fingers.
Stop. I can't even think of the mandolin.
The mandolin scares me. Yeah. Like the meat slicer and the mandolin scare me a lot.
They could have used an odd number of judges there to like add you and not have those two ties.
So that was making me angry. I was so mad that they're like, yeah, let's just have an
let's
even
go
number
talk about it in the dojo.
Yeah, where they're all like, this person should win. And it's like
how do you even decide?
How do you decide that? Like, whose opinion is more important?
That was ridiculous. Did you have a favorite and or least favorite challenge generally from this season, be it like elimination, quickfire, sorry, I'm forgetting the Last Chance Kitchen, like any of it?
Or even one where you've been like, if this had been on my season, I would have killed this.
Yeah.
Would you have liked cooking on the stumps?
Oh my gosh.
The foraging? The
mushroom challenge? Quick fire? Were they the cook on stumps?
Oh, yeah, I was only partially watching that one. That might have been in the background while I was returning emails.
They were cooking on stumps, so, you know, you're fine.
Nelson was so tall that he was like, my back hurts. This is hurting my knees.
I didn't love the drive-in episode.
Really?
Oh, no. Maybe because I heard so much about how bad the food was.
I agree with you. I thought that the concept of it was cute. I thought Padma's little vignettes were cute because, like, you know, it's Padma. So, like, you know, can't put a toe wrong. But I was just like, what is this? And why is it happening to us?
And it was like raining. I don't know. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, I think there were some messy dishes, and I don't know. It's kind of funny, like when you came on last time and said, like, the mom camp challenge, every dish was pretty shit. It's like, kind of like this. It's like they had to make some dishes look good, but it's like,
yeah.
And yeah.
The food you get at a drive-in.
And I think that sometimes there are challenges where people just nail it, and then there are challenges where, like, the food is just shit. You know, like, and you know, there's kind of no telling what that's going to be. I mean, maybe there is, but I got to say, probably my favorite challenge was this crab okay. challenge. Just maybe because I just love eating the crab so much, but just the scene, the atmosphere, like, and also it was just really fun being there, because when we were staying in the hotel downtown, it was like you go out, you shoot, you get back to the hotel. You know, Padma, Gail, and Tom were staying at their own houses that there were in Airbnbs, and you know, all of us guest judges were staying in the hotel. It's like you get back maybe. And you, like, we weren't allowed into each other's rooms. So like maybe we'd hang out in the hallway and have a glass of wine, but like it wasn't social.
Yeah.
And then we got to the coast and we had these like gorgeous rooms with ocean views. And I like went for a run on the beach with, the story I was going to tell you about Gail is that she loves to run. And we got back from the clamming, and I was like, I could either go to bed or I could go for a run. And I was like, the day is beautiful. I'm going to go for a run on the beach. So I go for a run on the beach, and then Gail, and I'm on my way back. I've just run like 5 miles, and I
can't relate, but go on.
And Gail texted me and she was like, hey babe, you want to go for a run? I just put my kid down to sleep, and I'm free now. Can we go for a run? And I was like, yeah, sure. I'm like headed back now, and I get back and I've just run 5 miles. And she was like, all right, how far should we go? And I was like, well, I actually just went on this run. She was like, you already ran? I was like, yeah, but I feel great. I'm good. I'm happy to keep going. We ended up running. She wanted to go the same path. So I ended up running 10 miles that day.
Oh my God.
And we got back, but I like didn't want to disappoint her.
Yeah,
she's like, I want to go for this hike up these rocks. I hear there's really beautiful rocks up there. I was like, yeah, I was just there. Let's go. And I got back and I like thought I was going to die.
Seriously.
But no. And then like we all ordered seafood from this restaurant down the street, and we brought it down to the beach and put together a little picnic and ate on the beach and went down to the tide pools. And then they set up, like the last day where we were there, they set up these gorgeous bonfires out on the beach for us, and like roasted marshmallows, and kind of, it was just, it was the perfect sort of ending to what was, I think, a really difficult scenario for a lot of people, sort of being cooped up, and we got to hang out and listen to Tom play guitar.
What's his favorite song to play on guitar?
Yeah.
I mean, he plays a lot of like folk music.
Okay. Does he know any Taylor Swift?
Just kidding. Oh my God.
Just kidding.
Doubtful.
But yeah. He seems like the type of guy who would play Take It Easy a couple times a night.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely got his go-tos that are all like folk songs, but I will say that he can pull up music and play pretty much anything.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does he sing too, or just play?
I mean, I don't know if he, I mean, it's not like he's a singer, but he might sing along to his strumming.
Yeah.
But no, it was one of the highlights. That coastal trip was an absolute highlight of not only shooting Top Chef, but like of my entire year.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Was it because of Tom's hat?
Does Tom have his own hat closet?
Probably. I don't know.
Will you text him for me?
I could text him. Would you like me to text him?
Oh my gosh, you can text
that for me, and then text Guy Fieri just something general.
Just anything.
Guy actually only FaceTimes.
Oh.
that feels correct.
Yeah.
You did get your truck, though. That is confirmed from last season of Tournament of Champions.
I did get my truck. It's a glorious truck. My husband now drives it. But it was a beast. It's also, I live in LA and like nobody wants to drive a giant Dodge Ram 1500 and park it. Like, I got to go to the bank sometimes.
I would get somebody to drop me off and be like, just circle the block a few times and I'll see you then.
People would think it was a robbery.
I was actually kind of surprised that the prize was another car on season two of Tournament of Champions. Because it was like, how would you like to win a new car? And I was like, how many cars can a family have?
So did you throw that last challenge so you wouldn't have to win another
car? Exactly what happened. I was like, you know what? Maybe if I break this Hollandaise, I won't have to take another car home.
How was it competing on Tournament of Champions this time? Like, did it feel like, I know you're so competitive and it felt to me like it was like all, not all new, but it was like you didn't lose your edge at all just like by coming in as the winner. Like,
well, how could you possibly lose your edge? It's the most like high and anxiety intense scenario you could put a person into. It's like there's no way you could walk into that kitchen and feel relaxed.
I really thought you were going to take it again, Brooke. Like, I was like, Brooke.
I actually did too. I really, like, walking into that final cook, I was like, holy crap, I could do this again. And then when I put my plates up at, you know, and the clock stopped, I looked at my plates and I was like, didn't do it.
Didn't do it.
I knew from the moment that I plated that I had lost.
A couple episodes before, I did drunkenly order Manit's new cookbook,
which is amazing. It's a beautiful book.
I keep buying cookbooks as like picture books. Like, do I make the things in them? Not always. Do I enjoy looking through them? Yes, I do.
Yeah. It's like photography books.
Mm-hmm. Who was your favorite person to compete against in that?
Trying to remember who I competed against. Well, like, favorite in what way?
Like, because you went against Michael Voltaggio again, right? Or was that in the second round?
That was in the second round. Right. The first round, who was the first round?
You went against your friend.
Oh, Naisha.
Yeah, Naisha.
Yeah. That was hard because we are like actual friends and I know how talented she is. And I was like, I mean, of course, nobody wants to go out in the first round, but she's very technically sound as a chef. I mean, I don't know. I love competing against Michael, but it's kind of a love-hate relationship because I love him as a person. Mm-hmm. And he's not the same person when he's competing.
I was going to ask about the Voltaggio bros. Like, what basically is my question. Like,
do they talk outside of
shows? Yeah, they're so different, it mm-hmm. seems, in their personality.
Yeah.
And they seem very different as chefs as well, like the way mm-hmm. that you put it. I guess I just, you know, want to know what like it's been like to get to know them over the years. Like, have they changed as they've gotten older, in terms of like how competitive they are, or
I think we all have changed a lot over the years, but I don't think that how competitive you are is one of those things that changes a whole lot. Okay. I think that that's something that you inherently have. It's ingrained in you, and I think that part of the reason why I have trouble competing against Michael is because I've gotten to know him as a person, mm-hmm. and I love him so much as a person, and I love Brian, but competing against Michael, it's like you're competing against somebody you don't know.
I think more of the manner of the competitiveness is what I meant. Like, you can still be super competitive, but you can change the way that you treat your fellow competitors.
And it's not even about how he like treats me. It's like, he's able to sort of turn off a friendship.
Like, disassociates.
Yeah.
There's a switch that flips.
There's a switch. And Brian, I don't think has that, but Michael does. They're very, very different people. I think their food is a direct reflection of who they are as people. Michael is probably more cerebral and his food reflects that. Whereas Brian, is more relatable, I think, and his food reflects that. But like both equally as talented as each other.
Mm-hmm. Who is the chef that like, I mean, you're obviously such a like big and like well-known part of this like chefing community, but like who is the chef that you are starstruck by?
I wouldn't say starstruck. I think I have immense respect for a lot of people.
Okay.
And it's interesting because even when I meet a chef now for the first time, like a celebrity chef, someone big, I don't necessarily, I more so feel like I know them than am in awe by them. And I think that's actually a really lovely thing. You know, the friendships that I've made with people that I've shot shows with, even in the last year, you know, I just shot Barbecue Brawl with Bobby Flay and Michael Simon. And I had never met Michael Simon. And now I would consider him one of my closer friends. There are people who you just kind of like click with. Right. And same with Bobby. Like I had met Bobby, but didn't really get to know him until recently. And the two of them kind of like, I feel like we're the same people, you know, and as much as I've maybe seen them on TV, I now feel like they're like legitimate friends. And I think that the fact that I have seen them on TV for so long has only made me feel like I know them better, which is funny because people say that to me where they'll meet me for the first time and they feel like they know me because they've watched me on TV for years. And it just, I think it cuts out a lot of that, like, let's get to know each other kind of BS. Right. Yeah. And I don't,
you're like, Bobby Flay, I know you're a chili master, so let's get this going. I've watched a lot of episodes of Bobby Flay, like many, like,
are you excited,
like
for, all of them. Are you excited for his new book to come out?
I love a cookbook. Like I said, when are you going to judge on Bobby Flay?
Maybe this season.
Yay.
But though that he's coming out with a book of recipes of dishes that have been made on the show.
That's cool.
The book that's coming out.
He also has a new cat food line.
Made by Nacho.
Tanya's like, why do you know this, Haley? Also, why is this happening?
Because you have cats, right?
Just the one. Ethan will let me have another one.
Okay. But no, I don't know that I get starstruck by chefs. I just like, I feel like I'm in a community of supportive people and get to know people quickly. And you have people you click with and then you have people you don't click with. And, you know, we all have our circles.
Did Carson Kressley tell you any gossip about this season of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Star 6?
Is it airing right now?
It just started on Paramount Plus.
Because he's shooting right now. Okay, so he's shooting and it's airing simultaneously.
Yeah. I think they're probably doing a regular season right now.
So no, when I spent my 5-6 weeks with Carson Kressley, that was in March. And we've tried to connect a couple times since he's been in town shooting, and it just hasn't happened yet. But he is one of my He really made my time in Texas on set so pleasant and entertaining. And he's really such a funny, he's a hysterical person. But he's one of those people where like he turns it off at the end of the day. Like, oh, okay. I think he exhausts himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I then like goes back to his room and
chills. Yeah. Needs to decompress.
Yeah.
I identify with that. It makes me feel better.
I like to be out. I'm a social person. I'm like, oh, we're done shooting. What are we going to do?
Yeah, I'm like, let's get drinks after this. Yay. Like, I was even thinking, like, putting myself in your shoes of, like, showing up at for the last four episodes. I would have so much FOMO about what was happening while, A, before I got there, and B, like, while I was in quarantine for that week. I'd be, like, looking out the window, like, what are you guys doing? Like,
Melissa was like dropping food at my door and she'd knock on the door and run away because we weren't supposed to see each other face to face. And I'd like open my door and be like, ramen. It was really sweet.
That sounds like the dream.
open your door and there's ramen.
Yeah. And not like delivered by Melissa. Yeah,
food delivery. That'd be great.
Yeah.
What else? What else? Brooke, we always finish every episode by talking about what we've been cooking and or making this week. You're a professional chef. What have you been cooking and or making?
Well, I was in Costa Rica last week, so I was making fish tacos.
Oh, my God.
Yum.
And drinking a lot of margaritas.
Mm-hmm.
What's your go-to margarita? Like a regular Cadillac margarita? Kind of straight up, you go for like the spicy margaritas? Like, is there a specific fave that you have margarita?
I do like a spicy margarita. I'm a big fan of a Serrano in my margarita, or maybe a little watermelon. But I will say that I'm kind of almost a like tequila lime juice
purist.
Yeah. Like fresh lime. I hate like concentrated lime margarita or like a margarita mix. Fresh lime is my jam. Maybe some passion fruit. I don't know. Like a good citrus.
Yeah. Something refreshing right now.
Yeah. Like that sounds great right now. And it's like,
it really sounds fantastic.
It's only 11:12.
It's Sunday, but it's 2:12 here. So
yeah.
What's your favorite thing on your menu right now at your restaurant?
That's tough. I have a great okra side dish that I'm really digging. It has like a Fresno chili and harissa vinaigrette, lots of garlic, and then the okra is just split down the center and like charred on the plancha and some crispy prosciutto over the top. I would say
oh my goodness,
and it's just like a side dish, but it's something that I eat a lot. I'm currently writing the menu for my whiskey bar to reopen. July 7th, we're reopening the whiskey bar, and that's a whole different menu that needs to be written, which I should have been doing maybe in Costa Rica, but I surfed instead.
Yeah.
I think you made a great choice.
Yeah, you should have been surfing and drinking margaritas in Costa Rica. You're fine. So, whiskey bar opening.
Yeah.
July.
Well, it's been closed since last March. Because it's a small enclosed space.
Oh,
this is the one that's in the back of Playa Provisions, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. So I'm excited for that to reopen. We have like over a selection of over maybe 500 whiskeys and a totally different cocktail list.
Gosh,
that just sounds like
heaven. I love whiskey.
Me too. I can't wait when the borders open and I can finally come down to LA and sit on the beach.
Mm.
Also visit Playa Provisions.
Yeah,
have my own Playa Provision.
Well, we can't wait to have you.
Latanya, what have you been eating and or making over the last couple of weeks?
Pretty recently, I had a really good gnocchi with some vodka sauce that I was just kind of a little bit obsessed with. I had, even though I probably shouldn't have, I had a really good, like when I was watching Olympic trials on Friday night, I had a really good Bloody Mary, like a spicy Bloody Mary that I'd been craving for a while. And then like in a little store that I have in the first floor of my building, they have all of this alcohol, but they don't have any like mixers or anything, which is odd. And so there was a thing that was like Bloody Mary in a can. And I was like, okay, I'll settle for this. But I didn't realize that it was more like a seltzer that had the taste of Bloody Mary.
Excuse me?
Yeah, I know. It's like a, what are those? What
like a White Claw Bloody Mary?
Yeah, like a White Claw Bloody Mary.
I'm upset.
I was just like, why? What have I done to deserve this? Like,
that's terrible.
Like, is there a hex on my house? Like, so yeah, those are just sitting in my fridge, and I'm gonna find some sap to like the rest of them too. Because the person at the checkout, you know, who they're normally very reliable, was like, "Oh my god, this is such a great choice," and I clearly wasn't reading closely enough because I would never have done that. Like, if I knew it was like Bloody Mary White Claw. So I finally got my like I avenged myself and got like my actual Bloody Mary, and thank God. kind of like simple stuff. Like last night, my sister cooked and she just made like a meatloaf and this cornbread with like kernels of corn in it.
Ooh.
That I like a lot. And she's not like, she isn't like a huge fan of like cornbread for whatever reason. I think it has something to do with Satan probably. but like, yeah, that was enjoyable. And then we put together just like, a charcuterie board too for, night one of Olympic trials for gymnastics and, had just like some really cool but like spicy peppadews there and some, and I bought like an entire jar of cornichons, which are apparently things that I can just eat. Like,
you just like knocked them back.
I can just like, yeah.
Did you do like any pickle chips? Shots where you mix the pickle juice with vodka?
No, like I can't do those. Like I can't do a pickle shot. There's something about that combination where my stomach is just like, you've erred, like error. So yeah, it's been a little bit like all over the place, but you know, still some yummy stuff in there.
Kurt, tell us about the drink you sent us a picture of.
Oh my God, it was beautiful.
Oh, it was, it looked more complex than it was. So it's, my birthday weekend. So I'm treating myself to a bunch of stuff. I typically, I go crazy on Gold Belly and try to time all the deliveries so that they arrive. So, but one of my good friends came into town. We went to this tiki bar across the street, and it was basically, I think it was called the Don Johnson. It was basically like your, you know, your cruise slushy. It was like half strawberry daiquiri, half pina colada. I had
it has to be pink and white, right?
Yeah. And then I had a great cocktail that was basically just like four kinds of rum and maybe some pineapple juice. But
who cares
I
had, at that point?
Yeah, at that point.
It was four kinds of rum.
I have a from Dangerous.
Sorry, should I answer this?
Yes, you should.
My God.
Legally in California, you have to tell her you're recording, though.
That's true.
Oh, I do?
Yeah.
Oh, what's going on? I'm doing a podcast right now. I have to legally tell you that I'm doing a podcast.
Oh, hi, podcast folks.
Hi. What?
Can you hear her?
Yes, actually. Will you tell everyone who is there? Who's there? Hi.
Brooke, tell everyone who just joined us on the podcast.
Oh, this is Chris and Kish, guys. Hi. Don't worry, there's no video here. We're just doing a podcast.
Hi, Kristen. Oh, we love you.
Hi, Kristen. We are obsessed.
She can't. Hold on. She can't hear you. Let me take
of
it.
Course not, because technology.
Now you muted yourself.
You muted.
Oh, I think because you took your headphones out, you muted yourself.
It automatically, yeah. There you go.
You're good now.
Wait.
It's okay.
It's okay. Didn't we almost have it all?
I'm going to call you back. I lost sound on everything.
Can you hear us?
Can you hear us?
You guys, I can't hear you now.
Oh, no.
There you are.
Okay, great.
Oh, my God. Sorry. That was a lot. She was like, what are you doing? This is also another person who only FaceTimes is Chris.
I was going to say.
Well, if I had that face, I would only FaceTime.
The person who only FaceTimes is Antonia LaFaso. So if my FaceTime is ringing, it's either Kristen, Antonia, or Guy Fieri.
I would pick up, gosh, any of those at any time of day.
That's the most, this day, I think, is probably the most exciting thing to have happened in my life.
Kristen is in town shooting a show. She's shooting season 2 of Fast Foodies right now. And she's trying to tell me that she wants to come to Ply Provisions tonight. But I have to teach a cooking class. And I'm going to have to tell her no.
Oh no!
Can you imagine telling Chris and Kish now, just like being able to do that? I could never.
She tells me no a lot. I tell her no a lot.
I think that's fair.
Boundaries, sure.
Actually, no. We very rarely tell each other no to anything. Like she shows up at LAX at like 11 o'clock at night. She's like, "Hey, I have like a 2-hour layover. Can you come get me and like, can we just hang out?" Yes,
of course.
Yeah,
I do live 5 minutes from LAX.
That was so cool and on topic that it was just like kismet that happened. Wow.
Yeah, sorry for the interruption, guys.
That was the best interruption.
That was not an interruption. That was a welcome.
That was a welcome surprise. Yeah. So Kurt, my annual thing,
there's a steak, mushroom, onion, and Gruyere pie that I get from Dangerously Delicious Pies in Annapolis every year, and it's amazing. I have a Mississippi mud pie in the fridge waiting for me and some cupcakes. Like, I kind of go overboard on Gold Belly. Love the site. Highly recommend it. That's going to be some just stuff in my face, stuff in my pie hole with pie for the next few days. But that's about it. How about you, Haley?
Made some banana muffins yesterday morning because I had three bananas that were going brown staring at me. And I said, I got to do this now, or else I'll never do it. So I made some banana muffins, but my work schedule's just been a little wonky that Ethan will get home before I'm done work. So he'll just make dinner. And so I don't actually have to expend any of my personal energy, which I haven't had much of lately.
Yeah.
I just need to get re-inspired, and I'm slowly starting to get re-inspired, but I've just been kind of in the headspace in which it just hasn't been happening for me, which is fine and dandy. It happens to all of us. But yeah, so that's been me. Brooke, like, what, truly what a thrill it is for you to join us every year. We always look forward to it. You're so generous with your time, and you're truly so nice, and you don't
have to. Thank you. You guys are super nice, too, and thank you for having me. This is always a lot of fun.
Plug everything you're doing.
Oh, my God.
Plug some of what you're doing if you don't want to say all.
I mean... My IMDb says I'm an actor, so...
Well, you know.
Isn't that weird? Okay, so right now, what's airing right now is obviously Top Chef. There's one more episode. And then there are a gazillion episodes of Barbecue Brawl on Food Network that will be airing for another, I think, 8 weeks. And then there's a whole nother season after that.
Ooh.
And I did recently shoot some Guy's Grocery Games. I don't know when that'll be on. And Guy's Ranch Kitchen, I also don't know when that'll be on. And yesterday I was shooting Top Chef Family Style. So that show is super fun. I think that might be just on Peacock. So look out for that. And then, you know, real life. At Playa Provisions, which is the one restaurant still standing, and we're really busy, and it's great. If you're looking for a job, we are hiring. just keeping busy and big year coming up.
And you're at Brooke Williamson on Twitter and Instagram. Great Instagram content.
Thank you.
Great Twitter content too. It's just less frequent.
I don't tweet a lot. I kind of just like and retweet. Twitter is not my platform. Instagram is my platform, and I enjoy it. And if you want to know where I am or what I'm doing, that is where to go.
Okay.
LaTanya, what else are you up to?
I will be podcasting this coming week, like guesting on Everything is Super, talking about Loki. And then we have some stuff that's just kind of in the cooker right now, like, for the actual Olympics when they occur, Haley and Akiva so far that I know of. So
don't worry, folks, the biannual Olympics podcast is coming back every 2 years for the last 6 years. Wow. We have been doing this for so long.
Oh, well, yeah, it's going to be my first time, and I'm like over the moon about it. The Olympics are just one of my favorite things that happens ever in time. And so I'm just very excited that I get to talk about it. I feel like I've made it at this point. So I'm just going to retire after the Olympics are over, as if I'm an athlete. I'll just be like, you know, basking in the afterglow of getting to have a conversation with Brooke Williamson while Kristen Kish like FaceTimes in, because I don't even know what my life is anymore. So yeah.
Kurt, what are you up to? Tell me about Whodunit Pod. I started listening to it. I haven't finished it yet.
Oh, yeah. That was a couple weeks ago. So, yeah, back in 2013, Rob and I podcasted about the ABC series Whodunit. If you like murder mysteries and competition reality, it was a fun little one season show that was a moment in time. And yeah, we just kind of did a retrospective. It's on Rob's network. And it was good kind of to revisit something that happened 8 years ago. Yeah. And that was not reflective of the now.
Bachelorette's back, baby. Catch me over there talking about all of the disappointments.
Oh, yeah. I'll be on that at some point, too.
At some point. Definitely. Yeah. We're gonna look at our schedules and you're going to come talk to us about it.
I'm shocked you didn't ask me about Antonia LaFosa's appearance.
Oh, my God. I forgot. It was so long ago. Okay. Yeah. Tell me. Wait. Does Ben coach you, Jim?
Yeah.
You know so Ben.
I know Ben. Well, through Antonia, really. I mean, I started working out at this gym because of Antonia, and Ben's a trainer there, and they're very close friends. And it was hysterical watching him on The Bachelorette. And then when she went on, it was like, you know, because of the pandemic, they couldn't fly in his family for a family visit, and so she was like his backup mother figure, and she literally was like, he called her that, and she like looked at him and she was like, do you not want me to have sex ever again in my life? Like, you're calling me your mother? Like, what?
Just outstanding work. Yeah. I know. I was like, why is nobody talking about how Antonia's on the show?
She was like, I figured I'd do it. Like, the people who watch The Bachelorette aren't the people who watch Top Chef. And I was like, I think you're underestimating how many people watch both shows.
Yeah. I mean, there's two right here.
Twitter was like going insane. And she's like, I had no idea this would happen. And then people were like tweeting me asking when I was going to end up on The Bachelorette.
That was me. I tweeted that. Yeah. I said, I can't wait for Brooke to be my family visit when I'm on The Bachelor.
Or just like send your husband off in that Ford F-150 and become a contestant on The Bachelorette. Just do it for fun.
I'll think about that. Yeah.
Oh gosh. So yeah, Bachelorette podcast. I also joined Kirsten McInnes, Brian Scally, and Puya Zambakili to talk about Too Hot to Handle this week. I was sober the entire time.
I like that we've created the genre of dumb people on an island reality TV.
Why is that something you have to specify?
If you listen to it, you would know.
Yeah. Okay.
It was a hot mess, just like the show, but it was so much fun. I don't know. I'm doing other stuff too. Just follow me on Twitter because I'll retweet it at @hstrong_.
On Twitter at @LKStarks. Kurt?
@KurtClark.
How many C's?
That's two.
At the front and in the middle. Well, Brooke, thank you again. This was just an absolute thrill, per usual.
Fun to catch up. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, right. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
And with that, pack your knives and head on out. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.